Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Micro Brew, where the Milwaukee Brewers are the best team in baseball, are finally no longer on a winning streak. They set a franchise record 14 consecutive games and made Sunday's game interesting as well in Cincinnati. Unprecedented run of success. There's really no other words left to describe it. It's been described over and over again, and I don't even know what to say. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the show. I'm joined by my colleague at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, Todd Rosiak. He, of course, is Bore Witness. I think that's what we're going to go with. Bore Witness. We're going to do that. To some of the magic that this run has been. Todd, you can tell by my intro, like a little tongue-tied, because I just don't know what to say anymore. Even in defeat on Sunday, they rally from a one-run deficit. They momentarily take the lead on William Contreras' home run. There are so many moments that we are going to discuss this past week. We'll be eating George Webb burgers midweek if we are in Milwaukee. I'm guessing that's probably not going to apply to you. I have a feeling you'll be in Chicago covering this Cubs series that we will also talk about. But, sir, how do you describe it? When people are like, I mean, Is this really the best team in Brewers history? Like they could finish below 500 at this point and still have more wins than ever before. So on paper, they could easily reach that mark. But what do you even say when you're asked to describe what you have seen from this ridiculous run that they've been on, at least through August, but even before that?
I mean, tongue-tied, really, speechless, like everybody else. You know, you want to say, hey, I'm a expert on this team and I'm around the team all the time. There's no way anybody could have ever predicted this, foreseen this. And it's just been remarkable. Every aspect of the team, clicking on all cylinders, comeback wins, hitting the ball, playing good defense, running bases. It's just like everything came together over the stretch, and to be undefeated through the month of August until today in a nail biter down in Cincinnati was just remarkable, and very much so in Brewers fashion this year. Everybody doing a little bit to kind of carry the load. Andrew Monasterio on Saturday night helping win the 14th game in a row with the 3-run homer, number 14, leading the way to number 14. Just so many things happening during this stretch. Amazing. I was thinking earlier about this podcast, and I don't remember which one it was. We've done a number of them this year, obviously, but you talking about, oh, the Brewers threatening for George Webb burgers. And I just like, that never going to happen, and came close once. And now here they've done it. It's just amazing. Just amazing is the best way to put it. And Adam McAlvey and I were talking this last homestand. I don't remember which day it was, but and we can talk about this as well. I can pinpoint the day it all started for me. It was that May 25th game Sunday in Pittsburgh. Brewers come back to win 6-5. Bryce Terang, big hit late in the game. Caleb Durbin wins it. At the time, it was like, oh, hey, they stopped the skid here. Like good comeback win, whatever. Then they go on to sweep the Red Sox. Then they go on to sweep the Phillies on the road. And it was off and running. So to me, that was the day, that was the game that we'll kind of look back and kind of pinpoint as the start of all this, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think everybody will have their turning point. Jackson Chourio's catch to hold off a sweep against the Twins by stealing a home run from Royce Lewis, I think, is one that a lot of people will point to. Just in general, getting Andrew Vaughn, like that, the winning didn't start with him, but obviously there's been a surge forward. He had another home run in Cincinnati, another huge home run as the team came back from just no big deal, an 8-1 deficit, retired the final 23 men they faced. That was the 13th straight win tying the franchise record. And then they go ahead and add one more. They're down to their last out. Ellie De La Cruz throws away what could have been a game-ending double play, allows the tying run to score in the ninth. They go back and forth. They both get their runs and extras, but then it's Andrew Monasterio, like you said, with a three-run homer. Andrew Monasterio, who, like, let's be real, is one of the lightest hitters over the last 2 years for this Brewers team. Like, he is here as a utility guy. He's a guy who can back you up at shortstop. Great guy, great clubhouse guy, but under no circumstances do you assume he is going to hit the three-run homer. And you start making comparisons to the great teams in Brewers history, the Ned Yost home run in 1982 in Boston that the Brewers so badly needed from also a backup player, backup catcher down the stretch. You've heard Bob Uecker's name invoked, I think, this week more than any other week, the sort of the magical, the angel watching over them concept. And when Monasterio hits a home run, honestly, like, and you said 14, number 14 for the 14th win, like you start, you know, the hair kind of raises on your arms. As we look back on this streak, and I've said this on previous podcasts, like I think we long ago crossed the threshold where, yes, let's say they lose right away in the postseason, it'll be a disappointment, of course. But this season has been so fun for Brewers fans that it will be remembered. It will be its own thing. The 2025 season is now a thing. And I wonder what you think people will recall from this particular streak. In 1987, when they won 13 in a row, it was easy. It was the start of the year. So there was an immediate emphasis, even at like 4-5-0, like, oh, they're the last team standing, undefeated. And then they get a no-hitter from Juan Nieves for the ninth game in that. And then the 12th game is Easter Sunday. Everyone remembers that. So like these were touchstone moments that made the streak stand out, including what they did later in the season. What's the moment? And it might be a Monasterio for number four, you know, the 14th win, just the magic of having a light hitting backup infielder deliver the big, big blow in a game that they ultimately won by a run. Maybe that's it. But there are so many other moments. There's Blake Perkins's throw home. There's Isaac Collins with the walk off. There is the rally from 8-1 down with Bob Uecker's bat, Christian Yelich using a bat adorned in Bob Uecker, you know, Bob Uecker paint, essentially. And he hits two home runs of the Brewers rally back. He goes 4-for-5, insane stuff. So what are you going to point to as you try to imagine this in a long-term view? What will stick out from this run?
Oh, I definitely think the Monasterio homer, for sure, for me. The Yelich homers with the Uke bat you mentioned as well. Perkins throw home, as you mentioned also. And to me, kind of like, even though he was not with the team in Cincinnati, a big part of the streak too has been Isaac Collins, you know, for touching sure. A number of these games and really, I don't know if you want to say solidifying his spot in the Rookie of the Year race, you know, depending on what you look at. Some people are considering him the favorite at this point, but he's had such a big hand in all of this as well. So, and again, that's what's fun, is looking at these different moments, these different players, and not, you know, necessarily pointing to one guy, you know, kind of spearheading this all. Everybody's had a part in this. You know, Andrew Vaughn has obviously played really well also. You know, they've won on the road. They've won at home. They've come from behind. They put up a ton of runs. It's just, it's, again, incredible, incredible stuff from literally every aspect of the team.
Yeah, I do think we'll remember number 14. It's something that's never been done before, and Andrew Monasterio being the guy to deliver. But I mean, I did something, Todd, that I don't think I've ever done before in my life, and that's attend three different baseball games in three different stadiums in 1 week. Went with my family on Monday to a game against the Pirates. Quintana pitched. Brewers ended up winning fairly handily in that one. That was win number 10 in a row. I was there working for the Journal Sentinel for wins number 11 and 12 in a row, clinching the George Webb promotion. That was against Pittsburgh. But Thursday, I went to the Appleton Timber Rattlers to see the debut of Andrew Fisher, the first-round draft pick this year. Brought my family to that. So check that out a little bit north. And then on impulse, Friday, went to Cincinnati. Why not? Let's go. Dragged my kids to Cincinnati, and we went to watch some baseball on Friday night. And they went down 8-1. And I got to tell you, my daughter, who was a little tired from a long drive, was not having it that we had driven all that way to see what was looking like a blowout at that point. She was so mad. She was so frustrated. And I, you know, like, I'm like, well, there's a lot of ball game left. But also I'm like, yeah, do you want to walk around the river? Like, there's not, this is not going to go well. It's not going to end well. But of course, we only had to wait one inning before, when Andrew Vaughn homered, I stood up and I was like, oh, they're going to win this game. They're going to, of course, because that's just what we've grown accustomed to. They went down in a lot of these games. They went behind, and they rally back every single time. 5-0 against the Mets, 8-1 against the Reds, single, double tallies, you know, at least one run tallies in all three games in the Reds series. Just remarkable. I am glad that we've gotten to this point where I do think this rises above what happens in the postseason. Obviously, what happens in the postseason is what ultimately matters for a lot of fans. But I do think we have passed that point where the regular season just gets forgotten. I think about 2021, where they had such a good team and they won 90. Was that 96 games too, right? Or was that 95? That was 95.
96 was the 2011 team.
That's right. And 2018, even though they needed 163. But I think 2021 basically got wiped off the map. It was a great year, but it wasn't like buoyed by any particular thing. It was just really good pitching. And then they did so poorly in the postseason with the sort of offensive struggles that kind of were worrisome. And I think 2021 is forgotten. Like, I don't think people remember much about that season. Maybe they remember the no-hitter, the Corbin Burns, Josh Hader combined no-hitter. But combined no-hitters, we've talked about that. They are what they are. As we look ahead to the postseason, because the Brewers are going to the postseason, will they? Okay, if the season ended today, they're far and away the best team on paper to win. Or they have the best record by 6 games in all of baseball over the Toronto Blue Jays, second on that list. Plenty of teams right there, right in that mix. If the season ended today, would the Brewers be favored, do you think, by sort of national punditry or just people in general to win the World Series? Because I still think they could win every remaining game. And I think we get into that small series and people be like, well, the Dodgers, though, you know, the Brewers are really good, but the Dodgers are still really good, too. The Dodgers are good. And, you know, the Phillies have this great lineup and pretty, you know, some phenomenal starting pitchers. And the Padres are kind of this up and coming team. We're still waiting for their big breakthrough. But they're, you know, that's probably going to happen sooner or later. Like, do you think people take this seriously? Like, do you think people around baseball are like, this is clearly the best team in baseball when the record says they're clearly the best team in baseball?
Right now, I think that people are buying it, and people are saying, you know, I keep seeing the Milwaukee Brewers are inevitable, and just seeing the national media kind of jump on the bandwagon and shaking their heads like everybody else. There is something to, you know, getting on just a massive roll like this and carrying it through and doing it like we talked about in all different ways. You know, there's not one area of the team where, you know, you can point to if it goes cold, then everything is going to go south. You know, the Brewers have multiple ways of winning games and they have ways of coming back, like we just talked about and like we've seen. So that being said, I was looking the other day, it might have even been last night, I can't remember, but, you know, looking at playoff odds, and the Brewers were third in playoff odds. The Dodgers were number one. So at this point, and it'll change, you know, it'll change, of course, but the best thing the Brewers can do is just continue to play good baseball, continue to win games. And I think Pat Murphy and that clubhouse, they've done a really good job of just kind of shutting out the outside noise, not letting this incredible streak, you know, go to their heads, if you want to say that, or affect what they've been doing, affect with how they've been playing. They just continue to play Brewer baseball. And that's the best thing that they can possibly do at this point. You know, they go into this big series against the Cubs, starting tomorrow, 8 games up now in the division, which, again, is incredible to even talk about, considering where they were a month ago, 6 weeks ago. But, you know, here they are. You know, they can manage to win 3 of 5. Tremendous shape the rest of the way. Even if they win 2 of 5, I still think they're in really good shape. You know, they've got very winnable homestand coming up after that. The month of September, I think, is difficult but manageable, you know, looking at the schedule. But again, I remember a couple of weeks ago us talking about the strength of schedule. Boy, how can the Brewers, you know, navigate this? And what they do, they clicked off 14 in a row. So it's kind of a fool's errand at this point to worry about the postseason, think about what's happening. I think the best thing they can do is just continue to play good baseball, continue to win. The wins will take care of themselves, and they're going to find themselves in a good spot ultimately come playoff time.
I think you're right about 2 wins out of 5 being plenty. Then the Cubs gained 1 game on them. Then there's 7 games. The Brewers are 7 games up with September and like a week of baseball left in August. I mean, no one would predict any team to come back from seven games down with that much time to go. Is it possible? Sure, but it's not likely. I think the Brewers really probably just need to avoid getting swept. I mean, and it starts on Monday, but if they're in a little bit of a difficult spot because they use so much pitching in this Red Series. A couple games went extra innings. They've used their guys a lot. Their key relievers were used in high leverage spots a lot, and now they go into a doubleheader on Monday, kicking off. We're in the middle now of a stretch that just started of 19 games in 18 days. And they're going to have to play five of them against their chief rival at Wrigley Field. They're going to need somebody to really rise up and go, you know, eight innings or just a multi-inning relief appearance that saves some arms. It wouldn't hurt if there was a blowout either direction, I think, for some, you know, on Monday anyway. So that's a little bit of a challenge in the near term. What do you think about the Cubs at this point as a threat? Because even though eight games does feel pretty good, the Cubs are like, they're still a good team. Like they're not, they haven't played great, but they haven't been terrible. They've won a bunch of games. You know, they've rallied. They've still got some really good pitchers. Cade Horton, who goes in the opener Monday, has been sensational. He had a 29 inning scoreless streak going back to 1987 team streak. Teddy Higuera's 32 inning scoreless streak. That's a record in Brewers history. Horton just went off 29. And the one run that he gave up, you know, he still finished allowing one run against the Blue Jays, the other best team in baseball. So he's really, really tough. They still have some pretty good guys. Their lineup, I think, is still pretty comparable to Milwaukee's. I would still say probably better if I had to pick one lineup. Gun to my head, I might say Chicago. So, in terms of threat, like how over do you feel like it is? Do you feel like it's safe to say, well, the Brewers are going to run away with this now, or do the Cubs still give you a little bit of pause?
The Cubs definitely still give you a little bit of pause. To me, looking at this series, I think there's two things that are going to be important. You mentioned one of them already, the pitching and trying to get some length out of those starters with the bullpen being gassed. Obviously, the Brewers are going to get that extra guy for the doubleheader on Monday. That will help a little bit. One of those guys will come from the minors. I'm sure will start one of those the second game, I should say. Freddie's got the first game. You know, you're not going to get a deep start from Jacob Mizrowski when he starts on Wednesday.
Right.
So that's something you got to factor in as well, especially these first three games are going to be very important to try to get some length from the starters. So if you can do that, check that box, mission accomplished. The other thing to me that's going to be really important in this series is to keep the kid with the blue hair and the kid with the big feet cool off at the plate. And by that, I mean Pete Crow Armstrong and Kyle Tucker. That's what Murph affectionately calls those two in the games that they played. Recently, since the All-Star break, PCA has been absolutely ice cold. Kyle Tucker has not been able to get going. I've seen things about him dealing with a finger injury. So if you can kind of keep those guys, if you can keep those guys in the park, number one, and number two, just kind of at bay, the rest of that lineup certainly doesn't scare me as much. So, you know, navigating their pitching, I think, will be a little bit easier for the Brewers. The Cubs bullpen has gotten a little bit better since the trade deadline. They've kind of bolstered it a little bit, but definitely been the weak point since probably late May, early June. And we're still waiting to see who their probables are going to be. Matthew Boyd is obviously going to start one of those games. Cade Horton is going to start one of those games, but that's a little bit up in the air too. So if you can keep the crowd out of it as much as possible, you know it's going to be a zoo down there like it always is. You try to keep a lid on the two big guys in their offense. I think you're going to come out of there in fairly good shape if you're the Brewers.
Yeah, Chad Patrick hasn't pitched since August 12th. There's no announcement, but I mean, that would make logical sense that they add him as the 26th man. He then would start the nightcap most likely on Monday. And, you know, and that would solve some of their problem. He has he's not pitched since August 12th. So I want to ask a little more about Mizrowski, because if we're looking for a group, gray lining what's the opposite of a silver lining, like when things are going great but there's I guess a little bit of storm cloud, it's how Mizrowski really, really struggled on Friday. He didn't make it through the second inning. It was going to be a short outing for him anyway, but he completely lost the strike zone. Ended up giving up five runs. Three of those scored after he left the game, but it was looking bleak. He was unable to throw strikes and was getting hit even a little bit when he was throwing strikes. This is his first appearance since he came off this injury, July 28th. But, you know, I don't really get the sense that injury was necessarily the problem here. He struggled with the mound a little bit. But, you know, you start to go back here, and I know they're limiting innings is a big deal here, big part of the equation. You haven't seen a Mizrowski start that's really been like a a full length start since July 8th. I mean, he goes 3 2/3 in Seattle by design, and he was good. He was solid. He struck out seven guys in getting 11 outs. That's incredible. With the Cubs, he had a really rough first inning, rallied for three really promising innings after that. It's a four inning outing, but like you're talking about, again, about a team that is, it has been worked pretty hard lately. You know, there's another short start probably in the near future here. They're really concentrating on limiting things, but we also haven't seen Mizorowski just straight up get deep into a game and look dominant because it's been such short spurts. So I guess I'm curious what you think is in the future for him. Will he get back to that? Is that, or is it going to be like essentially a glorified opener, very glorified opener going forward until we get to the postseason? Is there concern that we haven't seen that level from him over the course of six innings or even five innings since well over a month at this point? How would you consider his situation at this moment?
Yeah, I think it's going to be kind of a slow ramp up. I wouldn't necessarily be worried at this point. Was that a great start? Absolutely not. But, kind of getting his feet under him again, a little bit like a baby giraffe, coming off that shin contusion and everything, been out for a little bit. You know, this is all a learning process for a young guy, a guy that's been through it, going through it for the first time. And the Brewers are definitely treating him with kid gloves, as they should. I think for the time being, we're going to see these shorter outings, try to get him a little bit of a rhythm, try to get his feet under him. And as the postseason starts to get closer and closer, I think you'll start seeing those pitch counts creep up. You'll start seeing the innings creep up. And with the goal, obviously, of getting into the postseason with him clicking on all cylinders and being able to throw, quote unquote, a regular start. So, no question, they've got this all mapped out in their heads. They know what they're doing. They know how they want to handle him. And the thing about Miz is already, I really love the guy's mindset and the way he's kind of handling this all. I think we've talked about this before, just very mature, on the organization side with everything, has not gotten rattled, has handled himself well after tough outings. And he's had other tough outings, the Mets game for one, way back when is one that kind of stands out to me and says all the right things. So I think he's in a great spot. And now you just kind of get going. You try to build a foundation again, get that pitch count up. And like I said, once you get closer to the postseason, you're in a better position to, affect the team positively in these short series.
Mentioned Euchre earlier, and of course this moment on Friday when Christian Yelich homered twice with his bat and ended up, driving in the tying runs. Go-ahead run. He had four hits. Needed a triple for the cycle. Could you imagine a guy hitting four cycles against the same team? That would be unreal. He's already, of course, got three. I think he would have been the first big leaguer ever to have four cycles.
Would have been the first one, and I covered the two down in Cincinnati. I actually had the good fortune of seeing those two down there, and if ever there's been a ballpark that is a really a possibility, it's Cincinnati. I don't know if you've been there before, JR, but
I have. Yes.
Typically, going into those series and those games each time, that it's has the possibility to be a little bit of a gong show the way the ball flies there. So I was setting myself up in my head. The Reds did obviously win that game today, but when TJ Friedl stepped to the plate, I was thinking, wouldn't this be something if he wins it with a walk-off hit here, ending the Brewers' streak? And he was the guy who ended the eight-game streak way back in early June when he robbed Jake Bowers of that homer. Remember
that
game?
Right.
That game?
That's right. I forgot all about that.
Yeah.
You know, when you win all these games, eight-game streaks are just like, whatever. No don't even think deal. About those. Yeah. I forgot all about that. That's incredible. That would have been incredible. I would not have made that connection.
Yeah. He did score the winning run today, I believe, but that would have been even neater from, I guess, a story angle standpoint to have him drive in the run. But whatever. I mean, it is what it is. And Cincinnati, they survived it. They're out of it. And now it's on the five big games at Wrigley.
Cincinnati very much in the playoff picture at this point, battling with the Mets for the last wild card spot. They're very much involved. And if they hadn't blown an 8-1 lead, they would have, in fact, had at least temporarily that last spot. Cincinnati deserved to win one of these games. It is they should be confounded that they didn't win maybe all of them. But anyway, I was talking about Yelich and what we've seen from him. You know, easy to forget, or maybe not so much anymore, but they didn't have him at this time last year. You know, he was on the injured list. His back had flared up. And they didn't have Yelich for the playoff run. And I don't know if it ultimately made a huge, huge difference other than Yelich was having a really tremendous year, even when he was, you know, experiencing some back issues. And this year he's kind of back at it again, especially lately. He is a player who goes up and down. So I'm not saying that we should, you know, the Brewers are going to bank on him being at this level all season long. But he's kind of giving off some MVP vibes, you know, like he's been so essential to what they're doing. And I mean, maybe you could say the same thing about Andrew Vaughn or even Isaac Collins, who was NL Player of the Week, coming off as NL Rookie of the Month. But it feels like having Yelich there is something extra. I don't know if it's worth getting into the intangible concept of having a former MVP playing at a very high level in the middle of your lineup every day. But you see him and there's kind of a comfort, like as much as it is these guys who are small, feisty, going to single you to death, going to put the ball in play, going to take the extra base. It is all of that. There's also Christian Yelich, who is gold standard baseball when he's going well. Give me your thoughts on that a little bit, what he does for this team, even when, you know, even if he's not, you know, having a good game, which is rare now, what he provides that maybe they didn't have last year.
Yeah, definitely. He's a run producer. He's a guy who's seen it all, done it all. He's a power threat anytime he steps to the plate, as we've seen time and time again. To me, you know, you mentioned the fact that he was not even playing at this point last year, you know, and that he's going to undergo the back surgery with the hopes of being ready for this season. That ultimately proved to be a great decision because he's had, as far as we know, no back problems at all, has not been on the IL for the back, anything. Has he gone up and down? Yes, of course, everybody does during the course of a baseball season. But once, you know, this season is finished, and provided he remains healthy the rest of the way, he's going to wind up playing 140-ish some games probably. He's going to wind up with 30 homers, 100 RBI. And that's always been the benchmark of, you know, a really solid run producer. So to get him back to that level after so many years of struggling and searching and everybody being so upset with him not being able to get back to that MVP caliber player that he once was, it's got to be tremendously gratifying for both him and the organization, and it bodes well for the future. You know, there's still more in the tank for this guy, and to me, above all else, I just think he's been such a tremendous example in the clubhouse as far as being a leader, being a calm voice, rational. Anytime you interview him, JR, you've done it before, you know, he never gets too high, never gets too low, and he'll always tell you the same thing. This is baseball. We have ups. We have downs. It's a long season. You know, it sounds kind of boring in the moment, but it's very true, and you just kind of need that flat line over the course of a season, I think. Several players who can kind of continue to just motor along, truck along like that with that outlook. William Contreras is another one who's just, you know, his numbers are starting to ramp up here. You know, he hit the big homer today in Cincinnati, almost got him that 15 straight win. But, you know, he's looking like a different player. Maybe he's turned the corner with the finger thing. Andrew Vaughn, another guy, veteran who's been around and kind of, you know, seen the ups and the downs, certainly. And he's another one who doesn't get too high and get too low. So it's very important to have those types of personalities and those types of performers on a team where you are really stocked with young guys, inexperienced guys, and guys who maybe have done it for a few years, but not over the long haul.
Yeah, Contreras has been excellent, you know, in the month of August, just really pounding the ball. He's got 5 home runs now in the month. He's hitting, making contact. He's seen his OPS go up 20 points, 738 to 758 since the streak began. So things are very much looking up. He's got, I think, 3 or 4 doubles in this stretch as well. What are you expecting? Speaking of Uecker and, you know, Christian Yelich, of course, with this bat and had a very close connection to Bob Uecker. What are you expecting later this week when the San Francisco Giants come to town? Team is hosting a big remembrance on Sunday for Bob Uecker, kind of the opportunity for fans to really sort of come together and remember this icon who, like I said, has kind of been not in the news, but like more and more people are thinking about Uecker as the magic of this season continues, these unprecedented things that we've seen. Certainly going to, I think, hit home emotionally and would have no matter what the Brewers were doing. But the fact that they're playing at this level, I think, is going to have a lot more engaged. What do you think? What do you think this will look like when things roll around on Sunday at American Family Field?
Well, how about this? I'll just throw this out too, as far as timing and serendipity and everything. How cool is it to have the Giants in town and Willie Adames in town? You think he's going to be on the top step of the dugout watching that unfold? You know, in all the things I've kind of experienced and covered over the years, one of the most remarkable was this past spring talking to Willie in the Giants clubhouse during spring training about Uke, and never in a million years expecting to see the tears start flowing like they were after the playoff loss to the Mets last year. And that just showed me, like, you know, A, again, it reinforced what an incredible human being Willie Adames is, but B, just the impact that Uke had on everybody that got to know him over the years. And, you know, Willie obviously certainly had a very good relationship with Uke. Uke meant the world to him, and Uke meant the world to everybody. Everybody who grew up in the state and followed Brewers baseball. I think it's going to be a tremendous afternoon. They've got a lot of really cool stuff planned, bringing in the rest of the surviving Belvedere cast, Bob Costas. You know, they're going to do the memorial program before the game. They're going to have a memorabilia display, which the family, I understand, is contributed quite heavily to, things that I don't think have ever before been seen. There's going to be one-day-only Uecker merchandise, of which all the proceeds will go to benefit charities that Bob Uecker supported. So it's really going to be a great chance for everybody to come out and remember the guy who literally defined Brewers baseball. And, you know, I've seen the graphics people have made and the comments and everything, and you can't help but think that Uke is looking down and smiling and just saying, go get them, guys. Continue to go get them. Would it be great to have Uke along for the ride? Absolutely. Unfortunately, that's not the way it worked out. But, you know, the Brewers can certainly continue to honor his memory by winning and playing Brewers baseball the best that they can.
It's going to be hard for Brewers fans maybe to like get re-energized for a new week, but it starts fast. Five games in Chicago, including a doubleheader on Monday, day-night doubleheader against their big rival, a five-game series, followed by that three-game series at home against the Giants, including the Uecker Remembrance on Sunday. What a loaded week we have ahead of us. So it's going to be a wild ride. All right, let's shift gears. Let's talk about some of the more granular details from the week. There's still plenty of ground to cover. Here's our weekly segment, Three Up, Three Down. Would you like to go first, sir, or would you like me to go?
Sure, I can fire away. You know, you mentioned that you were up in Appleton on Thursday seeing Andrew Fisher. I was up there on Tuesday for the debuts of Jesus Mate and Luis Pena, the home debuts, I should say. Mm-hmm. And what a treat that was. You know, obviously the Brewers have been playing at an incredible clip and doing great things, but it's fun every once in a while to kind of shift gears a little bit and go look at the future. And it had been several years since I had been up to Appleton. But Chris Mehring does such a terrific job there, of course. You know, the voice of the Timber Rattlers, their PR person, really a one-man band. And it was really cool to kind of see the young guys up there. They both play really well. And just kind of laying eyes on them for the first time. That's the first time I'd ever seen Pena play. And, you know, I had seen Mate a little bit in some games on the backfields during spring training this past spring. But, you know, kind of standing next to them, being up close to them, a couple of real studs physically. I mean, just guys are just jacked. And it's hard not to think a couple years ahead now what that lineup, that Brewers lineup, might look like when those guys, assuming all continues to go as it has, as those guys start filtering onto the major league team and what the potential is there. It's crazy. You know, you talk about the here and the now, the 14 straight wins, the best record in baseball and everything, but kind of lost in the shuffle this last week was the fact that the Brewers were named as having the number one farm system in baseball as well by Baseball America. So you just talk about an organization clicking on all cylinders and just top shelf talent from the highest levels of the minor leagues all the way down. Definitely bodes well for the future for the Milwaukee Brewers.
Yeah, that was a midseason update from Baseball America. And Jesus Mate, of course, one of the top prospects in baseball. I very badly wanted to see him and Luis Pena. Both those guys had great games when I saw them Thursday as well. Andrew Fisher, I mentioned. Marco Dinges, that top four in the lineup is about as good as it gets. Bishop Letson, who's way up on prospect list. He came off of an injury and finally started again on Sunday in a brief appearance. But still, he's back now with the Timber Rattlers. Go see this team now. They're not all going to be there for very long. They might not even be there for like three more weeks. So if you get a chance, please go out there and see them in Appleton. You'll really love it. You'll love getting to see these guys play. Those guys are going to be big leaguers pretty quickly. Luis Pena looks fantastic. Like, he's a guy that, you know, as Jesus Mate was rising up, I knew Luis Pena was there too, but I wasn't, you know, there was kind of this like, well, Jesus Mate is the guy. Well, Luis Pena is really close to being the guy, and may, you know, as we go on, who knows which one of those two guys ends up being kind of the first guy to arrive, or the player that kind of, you know, that gets buzzed about the most. It's a really exciting time for Brewers fans, Timber Rattlers. Jacob Mizorowski is still considered a prospect at Baseball America. That's part of why they rank so highly, but I don't even know if the Brewers have gotten full value out of Mizorowski yet. He still feels like a prospect to some degree because of what we talked about earlier, where he's kind of getting limited so that he's got some bullets left in the chamber for the postseason. He's going to graduate off that list soon, but he's still unrealized as well. So this is a very exciting time. Okay. So what is my number one? Man, where do I go? So many options. I think this Friday game that we went to in Cincinnati, I did not realize until I got home that the Brewers had retired 23 consecutive batters to close the game. I was so focused on the offensive production on both sides and how unlucky the Brewers were when DL Hall was giving up some hits, and it ended up being an 8-1 game so fast in the blink of an eye. Then the Brewers relievers came back and got everybody out. I mean, Hall started it. Every pitcher obviously, you know, faced the minimum. 23 consecutive outs is pretty wild. That's something that kind of gets hidden when because there's a big offensive comeback. I did not realize that literally until I was back at my parents' house in Kentucky that they had retired the last 23 men in a row. That's the type of thing that happens on teams that are in incredible winning circumstances. So a wild finish to a game in which the opponent had 8 runs in 2 innings. Crazy stuff.
Yeah, one of my favorite things over the course of every season is, especially ever since Immaculate Grid has been created, is kind of the anonymous guys that pop in and pop out and affect the roster in one way or the other. And we can add Stuart Baroa to the list of players who have reached the major leagues with the Milwaukee Brewers this year. So he and Drew Avans, if anybody can remember him already from playing a couple games in the outfield for the Brewers earlier this year. Those are two guys that are going to go down in Immaculate Grid history, and two names that I certainly will use. And I've already used Drew Avans once this season, and people were asking me, who is that? They didn't remember. So always fun, and he actually had an outfield assist in his first game that he played for the Brewers as well. So he did have impact on this Brewers winning streak for sure. And another little fun little tidbit, Joey Weimer called up to the major leagues by the Miami Marlins today. Kyle Stowers on the IL. So good for him. You know, he played a big role on the Brewers the year he was up and filled in center field very admirably. Never hit the way the Brewers wanted him to, and has kind of since bounced around the Reds, the Royals, and now with the Marlins and back in the big leagues. So good for Joey.
Yeah, Stuart Baroa, that it was important. The out he got at the plate was, you know, to cut down a run, ended up mattering when the Brewers came back, but struggled a little bit at the plate. He was sent back down. Blake Perkins was missing on bereavement leave for the first couple games. He came back. Stuart Baroa, I don't know if he's going to be back, to be honest, but you never know. They don't have a ton of available outfielders on the 40-man. If a couple guys go missing, like Isaac Collins, who's on paternity leave, did this week, and Blake Perkins at the same time. So kind of a move out of necessity. But Stuart Baroa, we'll see. We'll see if he's back. I've completely kind of overlooked, I would say, over the course of the week, is Paul Skeens, the outing against Paul Skeens. The Brewers faced Paul Skeens for a second time this year and beat him for a second time this year. 4 runs against him, just like last time. And Sal Frelick opens the game with a home run. It was the second night in a row that the Brewers had led off the game with a home run. Bryce Tarang did the honors the night before. So Paul Skenes, who has been lethal against everyone, he's legitimate. He's going to win the Cy Young, I would think. I guess I don't know. I haven't looked lately, but I don't know who's really contending with him. Zach Wheeler's out for a long time. I honestly don't know who else is in there. Christopher Sanchez, I guess. So the Brewers have found a way. And in the first game, I feel like with that Mizorowski Skenes matchup, it was really a lot of dinking and dunking. It was kind of a lot of fortuitous circumstances. I did not feel that way in this game. They just pounded him. They just hit him very well, and then kept that going against the bullpen and ended up winning in a laugher to get the 11th straight win on Tuesday. So tremendous stuff. Paul Skenes, the Brewers right now, they kind of have his number. Pretty exciting stuff. This, of course, after last year when he threw, I believe, 7 no-hit innings against them. So maybe having his number is a little strong, but a great performance by the Brewers all the same.
Yeah, I was actually in Appleton while that game was going on. I was sitting in the press box writing my story, and it was just kind of funny to see everybody else in that press box. They all had the MLB game day on, and they're all following the Brewers-Pirates game. And yeah, everybody said, oh, Frelick hit a homer off of Skenes. And then a little while later, it was like, oh, this happened. And oh, that. And then all of a sudden you look at the score, and you're like, what is going on? So It's definitely Brewer fever everywhere, even in Appleton with two studs playing at that particular point in time on the field. Sure. Yeah, another one of these fun little facts here, fun little kind of side deals that I love following. I know everybody else does too. Is the position players pitching, and we can add Cy Siegler to the list of those who will be utilized on Immaculate Grid at some point. You know, he's gotten an inning too, and a scoreless inning at that. So he is currently the only Brewer. I'm going down the list. He is the only Brewer right now with a 0.00 ERA. One of only two guys to pitch to make one appearance for the Brewers this year. Can you name the other?
Well, Jake Bowers.
No, he's
pitched just multiple. One appearance. Who's the other one? Oh man, Andre Monasterio.
Mm-mm.
I don't know.
Carlos Rodriguez.
Oh, I was thinking position player. That was foolish of me.
Yeah.
Carlos Rodriguez. Yeah. That was a gutsy effort in San Francisco, Carlos Rodriguez, coming back off of a rain delay and continuing to pitch. That was much needed at the time.
In Pittsburgh.
Oh, Pittsburgh. I get confused. And then there was rain.
Yeah. And then, well, what else is new in Pittsburgh, of course, right?
That's right.
Then he wound up having that flexor issue, and we have not seen him since. Will he come back at some point? We don't know. But, if nothing else, you talk about seminal moments in a player's career, that was definitely one for Carlos Rodriguez.
Siegler, man, did I want to see him face a lefty. There was a lefty on deck when he retired the last out of his inning, and I really wanted to see it because Siegler, kind of famously, is ambidextrous. He could throw and has thrown left-handed. He can pitch left-handed. He did so in high school. He even plays outfield with his left arm if he ever is asked to play outfield. Infield and catches with his right arm, and then when he is in the outfield, he'll play lefty. So I asked him after if he would have gone to the left arm if he had faced the lefty. He said he wanted to. He wasn't sure. He wanted to. I don't think he would have because he didn't warm up lefty. I don't think, and I should have asked this, if he has one of those gloves that flips over so that he can go lefty. Not. And he doesn't have that. So no,
We talked to him in spring training about this. I'm just fascinated as well. Just the amount of skill that it takes for a guy to do it at any level, but nevertheless in the major leagues, it's incredible. But yeah, he uses normal gloves on each hand.
Yeah, so he probably wasn't going to go with his left arm, but man, I wanted to see it. As it stood, he ended the inning, so it was good for him, but bad for us, bad for the content. My number three, my third and final, is really a question to you, Todd. Do you think for a second, we'll make this a leading question, do you think for one second that Craig Counsell has never seen a George Webb restaurant? That is what he told the Chicago Tribune when they were discussing the Brewer's success. Like, he's never even seen a George Webb. He doesn't even know. Are you kidding? Are you kidding me, Craig Counsell? Just because there aren't George Webbs on every corner in Whitefish Bay, there's no way he hasn't seen a George Webb restaurant living in the city of Milwaukee. Tell me what you think about this, Todd.
I was obviously very skeptical of that, and not long after thinking about it, one of our media colleagues, David Goh, who is now up in Appleton, he unearthed proof positive that Craig Counsell is not telling the truth in this situation. He found a story from 2018, last time the Brewers won 12 in a row, an Adam McAlvey story in which Craig Council is quoted extensively talking about George Webb. So not true, I don't believe. You know, certainly don't want to, you know, question his honesty here, but I can see where Craig Council does not want to talk about the Brewers anymore. He's getting those questions consistently from the Chicago media. Paul Sullivan is a gentleman who wrote this column in particular, and Paul is not afraid in the least to ask the tough questions, the controversial questions, and quite honestly enjoys the squirming that takes place after he asks said questions. So did not surprise me to see him write that. Good for a chuckle, good for a laugh. You can add that and to put that in the column of more reasons for Brewers fans to dislike Craig Council, whatever. But was kind of funny. There's no way you could grow up in this area and not know what George Webb's is. I'm sorry, especially if you were in the city in 1987, especially if you were the manager in 2018.
Incredible. Just incredible stuff, Craig Council. He's not invited to the August 20th celebration when people will get free burgers. He'll be tied up anyway when his Cubs are facing the Milwaukee Brewers. He'll be in Chicago. Stay there because the party is for those who acknowledge the presence of George Webb. That's going to be a fun thing on Wednesday. I think kind of during that game, it'll be going on. So I imagine there'll be people noshing on free burgers and also watching Brewers baseball against the Cubs. What didn't we talk about in 3 Up, 3 Down? There's plenty. Bryce Tarang's power surge, to start the week, continuing really throughout August. He had 6 homers in August early on after he homered in back-to-back games to start the week. That led the National League at the time. Pretty funny stuff. His power has really been something. He had 2 hits in back-to-back games in that Red series. Now, he did make a really crucial error on Sunday. His defense has been not quite platinum glove level this year. Still very solid. Did make a really big error that maybe ultimately cost them the game. But still incredible to see his power just like pop up out of nowhere. You know, to go from 6 homers to 12 over the course of this streak has been really something. William Contreras had a really nice play on Monday where he picked up a ball right at home plate, rifled it down to second, and initiated a double play in the process. Just a reminder that even though he was battling through this finger injury, his defense has always been solid, and that was a really great play, and obviously the offense has come along as well. Brandon Woodruff had a really tough start on Wednesday. First time he wasn't pitching with the extra day rest. And that seemed to be a big deal. That seemed to be something that he really needed. He'll have that in Chicago. But I didn't even realize that it was his first time on normal 4 days rest. He wasn't able to make it the full 5. So it seems like that was always part of the plan. And he labored a little bit. It was not his best outing, but it seems pretty optimistic that things will continue to be good going forward. Joey Ortiz had a great defensive week. Certainly that Wednesday game comes to mind. He had an amazing play against Cincinnati as well. Really an eye-popping highlight reel play. Still getting taken out now in games where they're trailing. He gets taken out for offensively late. He's not a guy that the Brewers are relying on offensively late game. So I do think that's worth noting and following as things go along. We did nearly on Wednesday have a game end with a triple play. It was 2 on, none out. Monasterio picked up a ball at third, rifled to second. Caleb Durbin did not throw to first. He's probably safe, probably. But I would have liked to have seen him throw it just to see. That was very nearly a game-ending triple play to initiate to secure a 12-game winning streak. Oh my gosh, the roof on that building! I don't even remember. I think the roof was open that day. It would have come undone though. It would have been incredible to see it end that way. And I think that's all we've got. I think that's it. I'm sure there's more. This week has been full of crazy highlights, crazy moments, but at some point we got to cut it down. All right, let's go back in time. Let's revisit the Brewers past. It is my weekly segment looking back. Remember when? Todd, I'm going to start by asking you in 1987, and I feel like maybe I've asked this before, if you did partake in the George Webb giveaway in 1987 when the Brewers won 12 consecutive games, but then the 13th. Were you there? Were you getting your own free George Webb burger at that time?
No, I would have been, what was I, a sophomore in high school, so I did not have my driver's license yet. And I don't think my dad would have bothered driving me to a George Webb's to partake in such a thing. So I did not have a George Webb's burger at that point, but I was, very avidly following the team, of course, and love Molitor and Yount and Gantner and all that, and what a fun year that was for sure, team streak.
Yeah, we might not get to chat about them much more now that their winning streak, their record franchise record winning streak has been eclipsed. I know there's plenty of people, Kurt Hogan included, who does not want to talk about 1987 anymore. So since he's not here, I'm going to do it one more time as a farewell. Because we all remember Easter Sunday. We all remember that game. We remember the Nieves no-hitter. I don't know if a lot of people remember the 13th win. And I thought, you know, while I was asking kind of about what the moment is that we'll remember from this streak, and I do think it's the Monasterio homer, the 14th and final win. But the 13th win is kind of like, by comparison, quiet in 1987. It was in Chicago against the White Sox. But it was a really good game. Like, it was a really exciting game. April 20th, 1987, fans from Milwaukee flocked to the south side of Chicago, just like they did in Cincinnati. Let me tell you, there were Brewers fans all up in Great American Ballpark this weekend. It was fun. You heard a lot of let's go Brewers chants, immediately followed by booing. It's like Reds fans were just a second behind, like, oh God, they're cheering again. It was great. But anyway, tons of fans flocked to the south side, Comiskey Park, to watch Juan Nieves in his first start since his no-hitter, pitching for the Brewers. He had just gotten that no-no against Baltimore a few days earlier, and then he's taking on the White Sox. Paul Molitor leads off with a double, scores on Greg Brock. There's a good name. Two-out home run, and the Brewers immediately had a 2-0 lead, but Nieves gave up some stuff. He gave up a single to Gary Reedus leading off the game, so that was the end of his, you know, there was no continuation of the hitless run that he was on. He immediately gave up a hit to start this game. Carlton Fisk had singled. That made it 2-1. Dale Sweem, in his first at-bat since that dramatic homer to win the Easter Sunday game, he doubled to right field. That scored Bill Schroeder, Rock, with two outs in the second. That made it 3-1, but then the White Sox scored twice. There was an error in there. Reedus singled again. Nieves ultimately allowed four runs, did not make it through the fifth. But then Chuck Krim, let's remember some guys. Chuck Krim, non-roster invitee in spring training, who had a remarkable start, big, big-time role in this 13-game winning streak. He comes in, he allows only one hit over 3 1/3 innings. Chuck Krim was so unknown, the scoreboard misspelled his name. They gave him a second M. It's C-R-I-M, and it was spelled Krim, like Krim's Fairy Tales. This whole season was like a fairy tale, a Krim's Fairy Tale. He had a 0.68 ERA to that point in the season, over 13 1/3 innings. He got a lot of work in this stretch. The Brewers did fall behind, even though Chuck Krim was awesome. They take the lead with two outs in the seventh. Molitor doubles to score BJ Surhoff. Robin Yount hits a bloop single. That scores Molitor, and boom, the Brewers have the lead. This was off of the second hit came off Bobby Thigpen, who was also working a ton of innings in relief. He retired the next 7 men in a row, but that was it. Dan Plesac, Crown Point, Indiana native, who went to a ton of White Sox games as a kid. He gets the save. He allows one hit in the ninth, leadoff single, but the Brewers get through it. Interim manager Jerry Royster is the one who got that hit in the ninth, by the way. Shouts to Jerry Royster. Future interim manager, I should say. Those were rough years for the Brewers, but people remember. And then, of course, Plesac locks it down. 5-4 win, 13th straight win that ties a major league record to start a season set by the 1982 Braves. The next game, 7-1 loss, was down the drain pretty quickly. And they went down 5-0. Well, never really in doubt. Paul Molitor had a single or something in the eighth, so it was pretty much over. And that was where the streak died. 13 games in a row. The Brewers do it one better in 2025. 14 consecutive wins. Some incredible stuff along the way. And that is it. That's our look back in Brewers history. Now, let's close this podcast down. Let's do it the way we do it every week. And that is with your take of the week, Todd. Here it is, Todd's take of the week.
Fans, just enjoy this. Enjoy this moment. Enjoy this time in the sun. You are fans of the best team in baseball by a lot right now.
By a lot.
It's incredible to say. It's incredible coming out of my mouth, but this is unquestionably the best team in baseball that you are rooting for and that you love. Enjoy it. This will not come around again probably for a while. If things all go according to plan and Jesus Mare pans out and Luis Pena and Andrew Fisher and all those guys, maybe we're talking about it years down the line. That's the hope always, right? But this is such a rarefied air for the Brewers and such a rarefied air for small market team to be sporting the best team in baseball, the best record in baseball, the best home record in baseball, the best road record in baseball. All these win streaks and everything, it just does not happen. It does not come around. So you can quibble with Pat Murphy's managing at the end of today's game. You can question Anthony Siegler is on the roster. All these little things. That's part of being a fan. But just sit back, take a 10,000-foot view of what's going on right now. This is unbelievable. Enjoy it. It doesn't happen very often. Please.
the Brewers will have the best record in baseball at the end of the Cubs series, even if they get swept in all five games. That's the position they put themselves in. Todd, I need to confess something. I picked them to finish 82-80 in our newspaper, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. They're going to have maybe 82 wins by the end of this Cubs series. That's on the table, certainly by the end, by the next podcast. Probably shouldn't have done that. Probably shouldn't have said 82-80. Probably shouldn't have said, oh, this is the year the magic runs out, because it didn't. It certainly did not run out. I'm worried for my well-being when people find that this is my prediction. Although I haven't been hiding from it. I've been telling people this is my prediction.
I'm in the same boat as you, JR. I can't remember exactly what I predicted, but it was not much more than what you did. And for many years, I've been way too optimistic and gotten burned. So I went the opposite way. And again, who could have foreseen this? If you were in Vegas before the season started and you threw a little bit of money down, you could be in good shape depending on what you bet. And certainly I'm not condoning anybody going to do that, but depending on the wager you laid down, you could be smiling pretty widely. So it's part of our jobs. We gotta lay the reputation on the line every now and again, and just going by the information that we had at hand at that particular point in time. You know, that guesstimate that you made, that guesstimate that I made, perfectly reasonable. We were wrong. It happens.
Yeah, this team didn't have a third baseman. And if you had said Caleb Durbin is going to be the third baseman, or some combination of Durbin, Anthony Siegler, who I don't think existed on the radar for most Brewers fans to this point in spring training, you'd say they're in deep trouble. Like, they can't do that for a season. They have no first baseman if Rhys Hoskins gets hurt. Even if you know Rhys Hoskins gets hurt. You'd be like, well, what are they going to do there? Like, they have no first baseman. They have no credible offensive first baseman in the system. They're certainly not going to just pick one up off of the White Sox, a guy who's struggling as much as any offensive player in baseball. They had all those pitching injuries, and it just doesn't matter. Like, they really do have something that we cannot put our finger on, and also they just seem to get the best version of everything. Like, this season has been the best version of every player, of every moment, with the possible exception of some of the injuries that they have had, because Jackson Churio has not been here for any of this. But it's just, like, it is so indescribable how they've been able to pull this off. Every bullpen pitcher has come through. Grant Anderson is, like, unquestionably one of the lower end of the totem pole guys and is very, very good. He had a rough day on Sunday. And, yes, Pat Murphy probably should have left Tobias Myers in. I don't know. But, like, those are not guys that you're relying on. And they're still excellent. I mean, if you had said Tobias Myers won't be as good as he was in 2024, you'd also say they're in deep trouble. Like, they need him, right? I mean, they surely don't have the pitching depth to go without him. But this is just where we're at. It's crazy stuff, Todd. Any last thoughts before I send you away? Oh, go ahead.
I was just going through the roster and just kind of looking at some of the names, you know, like, you know, who would have thought in the spring training Brandon Woodruff would not be making his first start until early July? You know, like, everybody had it pegged at May, certainly June at the latest. It didn't happen. He had some bad luck along the way. You're getting innings from guys like Easton McGee out of the bullpen. Chad Patrick, you know, what a force he was for the Brewers early, really solidifying that rotation that needed help, needed bodies, pitching very well. Logan Henderson, another guy that deserves credit, a hat tip for what he did to help stabilize the staff early in the year. Everybody thought Craig Yoho was going to be closing games for the Brewers. Oops, not so fast.
I did.
I mean, again, just another example of how fickle baseball is. Continuing to go down. Oliver Dunn was on this team at one point early in the season. Who?
He was going to be the third baseman.
Yeah, he was going to be the third baseman. Garrett Mitchell, we all pegged him for having a good year. Unfortunately, that guy gets the Poor Devil Award this year, just cannot stay healthy. I'd be interested to see what he could do in a full season. We have not seen it yet. You mentioned Anthony Siegler. No chance we would have guessed he'd be on a team and playing a role this late in the season coming out of spring training. We joked about Stuart Baroa, Drew Avens, all these guys. You know, the Brewers going on this winning streak without Jackson Churio, with Miz on the IL for a while, trading for Brandon Lockeridge. I mean, you can just go on and on and on, all the things that have happened. And most of these things have worked to the Brewers' advantage to this point. So, team of destiny, I don't know. We shall see. Andrew Vaughn, didn't even mention him. We shall see, but it's been a heck of a ride. And again, Brewers fans, please enjoy it, because this is rarefied air for sure.
Yeah, no Churio, and Mizorowski has thrown the worst inning of the streak in its entirety. And, you know, you haven't seen anything else from him. And yet here they are. All right. I am going to move into my interview in my this bit where I just can never remember to tease the interview. I talked to Brandon Lockridge, one of the newcomers to the team, about his arrival. He had a crazy, he's got some crazy stuff. Like, he just had a child and then he gets traded for the second time in a year to the Brewers, and he winds up getting thrown into the mix right away, and it has been a key contributor on defense in particular, and offensively he's had some good games here and there too. So wanted to chat with him, get to know him a little bit. So that's coming up right now, but I hope you enjoyed this episode of Microbrew, and I hope you enjoy what's to come. The things could get still dicey for Brewers fans if the Cubs like win four or five of these games, but the Brewers are still, gosh, they're just sitting so pretty, up nine games, or I should say up eight games in the National League Central after Sunday. Todd, thank you for joining me, man. We will catch up again very soon. Talk to you later.
Always a pleasure, JR.
Thank you, Todd. All right, here it is. Brandon Lockridge, chatted with him on the homestand. Thanks for listening to this episode of Microbrew. We'll catch you again next week. Bye-bye. My guest is Brandon Lockridge, new outfielder for the Milwaukee Brewers, came over at the trade deadline from the San Diego Padres. I want to talk about uniforms first. I have a theory, or belief anyway, that the Padres and Brewers are in contention for the two best uniforms in baseball. How do you feel about that? Do you feel it? Do you feel one should be the leader in the clubhouse if we're down to those two?
You know, truthfully, I'd have to agree with you. I really like both color patterns, you know.
Yes.
I do think they're obviously different in their own, you know, brown and yellow versus, you know, blue.
Yeah.
Personally, I like blue a lot, you know, love all the right. Padres, you know, very thankful for my time over there, but, you know, I'm a big fan of the blue.
Got it. I know you were in the Yankees organization for a long time. They, I'm sure, have the national reputation as best uniform, so I'm probably being a little sacrilegious with that. You, back in Pensacola, when you were growing up, you're on this undefeated baseball team that I believe was considered a national champion. Just give me a sense of that experience. I think you're the only guy still playing organized baseball this many years later. I don't know if that's right. So just the fact that you were on this incredible team, what was that whole thing like for you?
Yeah, you know, I was very fortunate to, you know, go to a high school that, you know, had a very good history of, you know, winning baseball. And, you know, from an early age, you know, I come in as a freshman and, you know, that was the big leagues to me at the time,
yeah,
you know, like I, you know,
sure,
just wanted to be able to be a starting position, you know, contributor to that team. And, you know, Coach LeBounty, head coach there, 600 plus wins high school baseball. He's kind of a legend in high school baseball.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I feel like that group of guys, there was a bunch of really good leaders, a bunch of guys that went on to play college baseball.
Yeah.
Forget at the time, but on that sophomore year season, my sophomore year, the year we went 30-0.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say there was like 12 or 13
that played college baseball.
That went on to play baseball from one high school team. So
that's wild.
Pretty incredible group of guys. And, you know, there's some guys in there that, you know, I talk to them to this day and tell them how much, you know, they've benefited my career, you know.
Yeah.
The senior group that year, there was Drew LeBounty, big, you know, Coach LeBounty's son.
Sure.
Tanner Halstead. These guys, before I could drive, they were picking me up in the summer to come hit with them.
Nice.
In the mornings. And
that's awesome.
You know, they made a huge impact in my life. I got to see how those guys worked, and, you know, obviously they were years ahead of me. So, you know, to see what guys that are going on to play college baseball, which was what I wanted to do,
yeah,
how they went about their business, that was huge.
So mention the Yankees organization. You cross paths with, like, so many guys that are here. Caleb Durbin and Anthony Siegler, Blake Perkins, I think. Josh Masiewski, I don't know if I'm saying his name
That's
correctly,
right,
but he's a AAA. You guys were all in the organization at the same time. I imagine that helped a little bit. I'd be interested in any stories you have about those guys, too, if there's any that are shareable. But I imagine getting traded second time in a year, it's nice to have some familiar faces when you got here to Milwaukee.
Absolutely. You know, I was Durbin's roommate last year in AAA with the Yankees.
That's wild.
So he had a hand injury, went down. So, you know, he went down to spring training complex to rehab. And I want to say he was within a week of returning when I found out that I was traded, you know. And so a week later, he was going to be coming back. You know, we'd already texted and kind of lined it up to where he was going to move back in with me. So obviously it was sad to leave him. You know, we got really close over that, you know, few months or whatever together. And, you know, the first thing when I was told I was traded over here was my mind went right to
Durbin,
you know, to the guys that I played with in the minor leagues. And,
sure,
you know, just having those familiar faces in a big league clubhouse, it's made the transition, you know, extremely easy.
Yeah. The fact that you were traded so quickly, easier second time around, or just is it jarring? You've only been without Padre for a year at this point, and now you're already in another organization.
Much easier the second time.
It is, okay.
And obviously knowing these guys, you know, I was with the Yankees my whole career up until I was traded to the Padres, and I knew one way, and it was what I knew with the Yankees. I knew top to bottom, every staff member, all the players, a lot of guys I played with for years and years. So, you know, it was a struggle trying to, you know, figure out the ways of a new organization.
Of course,
I had things that I'd done in my career that, you know, everything's just right there at your fingertips because you know everything so well with one organization. Then you go somewhere else, and, you know, obviously it didn't take me terribly long to adjust over there to, like, the different, you know, faces and just different environment. But this time around, it's, you know, I didn't know that I was going to be traded, but, you know, it was always in the back of my mind leading up to the deadline.
Well, A.J. Preller is the general manager of the San Diego Padres.
That's right. And so, you know, when I did find out I was traded, I was like, you know, it wasn't as much of a shock, I guess, as the first time around.
Do they have a facial hair policy in the minors for the Yankees?
They did when I was there.
Really?
It actually got
well, this year
taken away this year.
So they cut it through the minors.
That's
too.
Right.
That's good. Okay. No, that's good. That's healthy. How would you say, like, you know, you have a reputation for being very fast. How has that helped you? How have you honed that over time? You know, moving to the outfield, I imagine, was a pretty big change for you, but that's where your speed is obviously most useful. So, like, how would you say that skill has evolved for you in your pro career?
Yeah, definitely. Coming into professional baseball, I think it's one of the reasons I got drafted, or I'm very confident that that's the reason I got drafted.
Sure.
Where I was drafted was because of that tool. And I got into professional baseball, and I truthfully just, like, kind of neglected that part of my game. Like, you know, I was always caught up in trying to hit and, you know, would get frustrated with my game when I'm not hitting. And, you know, I knew I was been a good defender. You just kind of just go out there and be an athlete. But I think the difference maker was focusing on, you know, the stolen base game and, you know, proving to people that I can steal bases at a high clip and be good at it. And while that, you know, you think if someone that's fast just be good at stealing bases, there's way more than what I ever thought, you know, would go into it. And then, you know, I contribute a lot of my, you know, improvement on that. There was our base running coordinator with the Yankees, Matt Tallarico.
Mm-hmm.
He's now with the Cubs.
Mm-hmm.
But we worked in the offseason. I think it was going into the 23 season. So I just had my 22 season. I was in Double A. You know, had a good year in 21, had a very disappointing year in Double A. And was kind of seeing my way. You know, I was kind of looking in the mirror and being like, if I don't change something, I'm going to be out of the game really soon. So that offseason, I kind of sat down and we kind of put a plan together. You know, I'm out there in January at the spring training complex with Tallarico and some of the coaches. And, you know, we have sliding mats and we're working on lead lengths and feeling comfortable, you know, when guys pick off. And, you know, so I really nailed down some technique there, did some speed training programs, all these things that kind of just boost your confidence. Because when you're on the bases, if you're confident that you can't get picked off, it frees you up to steal.
Sure.
So, like, I just wasn't attempting stolen bases very often in my career because it was always that, oh, I don't want to make an out on the bases. You know, you look at the guys that have stole the most bases in the league over the years, and they usually lead the league in caught stealings too.
Of course.
You know, that comfortability of being able to get a good size lead and know that no one in the world can pick me off, it just freed me up to start taking chances. And that next year, I stole quite a few bases in 23 and then 24 as well. And I think that gave me the opportunity that I got with the Padres.
Yeah, you made a playoff roster at the Padres. You made an opening day roster at the Padres. And it seems like it was pretty competitive for both of that. So were those also things that kind of boosted your confidence? Were those surprises to you to get that chance?
Yeah, I mean, I'd be lying if I didn't say it was all a surprise, you know.
Yeah.
Like, obviously, I felt like I worked really hard, but, you know, working hard at this level doesn't necessarily, you know.
Right.
You know, you don't necessarily reap the results, especially that quick. So, you know, spring training was an extremely competitive group of guys. There was a lot of really good players that the Padres brought on. And fortunately, I performed well in spring. And, you know, they gave me a shot, which is all you can ask for as a player. So
yeah,
I was super thankful for that. You know, I wish I could have made more out of my opportunities over there when I did get the opportunities. But, you know, I feel like I learned a lot from, you know, my half season up there this year. And just thankful to be here right now.
Yeah, that's awesome. Did you have your first child, like, just a few weeks before getting traded? Is that the timeline? Or
that's correct, yes. We had him on June 26th. So I was optioned on a Sunday, and then I was headed home on Wednesday, the very next Wednesday. And then we had him on, I think it was Thursday. Closed on a house that Friday.
Are you serious?
It was a very busy week.
Oh my gosh. That's as nuts as it gets. And is your name Lawson? Is that
Lawson?
Okay,
right.
Very good. So he's just a few weeks old. That's amazing.
Right.
Well, congratulations. That's awesome.
Thanks.
I also it sounds like you're a big hunter, just like everybody on the Milwaukee Brewers. I don't know if you have any good hunting stories. You have kindred spirits all over the place in there, it seems like.
Absolutely. It was actually refreshing. You know, I've had so many deer hunting conversations with guys on the team here, and that was a really, you know, I guess we all have that kind of in common, which is really nice. So with the unseason coming up here after the season, that's, you know, everybody's got some good stories in there that I've heard already. So looking forward to that.
All right. Brandon Lockridge, new outfielder for the Milwaukee Brewers. Thank you so much, sir.
Yep, thank you.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
This Labor Day at Lowe's, shop member-only doorbuster deals for a limited time. Save $50 on an Ego string trimmer, now $169. Plus, get 50% off select Holland pavers. Not a rewards member? Sign up for free today. But hurry, Labor Day doorbuster deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 9/1 while supplies last. Program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.